Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:25 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is December 12th. Well, I thought we'd kick off in China. The H shares index was down a tad in here today, a couple of percent, but it's been moving a few percent a day for the last month, and we're back in the region of the 200-day moving average. So it's the first area of real resistance, and we're seeing a pause. And I think, well, I took my long off the Hang Seng last week just because I thought that I think the majority of the run of the initial run up has already occurred and we're due consolidation at the very least. But what's happening in China is obviously going to affect the rest of the world. And I remain of the view that the stock market isn't nearly as reliable an indicator of what's going on in China as copper is. So, copper prices were down about 7 cents today on the COMEX contract, pulling back also from the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, not in an especially dynamic manner, but certainly this is looking potentially like a lower high and confirmation of resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. China has rising cases of COVID. One of the biggest challenges for China is the size of the population. And then on top of that, the age of the population. There's been a lot of commentary about the Chinese healthcare system, and that it's not really well equipped to deal with COVID. I would think that that's not quite true. If we were to think about, for example, China's immuno-oncology, for example, industry, we could say that's massively underdeveloped relative to the rest of the world. But when it comes to isolation for a respiratory disease, there's a lot of practices that have been perfected, or at least tried and trusted at this stage in dealing with COVID, such as keeping chronic people on their stomachs rather on their backs. Those sorts of things don't require a lot of technology. What they need are beds and they need space, and they've built a lot of those facilities. So being able to handle an influx of people, well, it's going to require discipline. And there's a lot of people are flooding into the hospitals because they're terrified of the results of COVID, even though everyone else in the world has been through it already and is coming out the other end. A lot of people in China are ignorant to the fact that it really is not a lot worse than the flu for the vast majority of people. But what is also obviously problematic is that the government in China were very astute in making sure that they tested everyone and they published real data about how many cases there were. But now they've decided that the repercussions of COVID zero are no longer acceptable. So they're going back to the old playbook, which is make the numbers up. And the easy way to bring down your case numbers for COVID is stop measuring them. And that's exactly what they've done. So if you stop testing people, then the number of cases that are published is complete nonsense. You're not it's no longer a one-for-one comparison with the historical record. So therefore, I think it is really important to pay attention to what is happening in copper because it gives us a bird's eye view of what exactly is going on inside the Chinese economy. And when we think about what are the drivers of economic activity in China, I think we can break it down into three big sectors. The first is property. The second would be infrastructure development. And the third is manufacturing. So, manufacturing and infrastructure development, well, they're very heavy on copper demand. China is importing, processing, and using more than half of all the copper in the world. So, what happens in China is going to have a big knock-on effect for the price, and the price is wobbly at the moment. So I think it is reasonable to anticipate that China's growth, at least for the next 3 months, is going to be very questionable because we know from experience, what happens with COVID? That the number of cases ramps higher in an exceptionally quick manner. And the number of people that each new infected person infects is quite high. And we know that the infectivity rate of the Omicron variant is somewhere approaching that of measles, which means that basically, if you're in the same room as somebody with COVID, you're getting it. And then it's really only a question of how strong your immune response is going to be. And that basically means that everyone in China will have been, or at least everyone within the major population centers of China, will have been exposed to the virus within the next 2 months, because there's going to be an exponential growth rate, and that's to be expected. Then we'll see that the numbers will start to fall off again, but it's going to take a while. And there's always that scary month, and we've had those scary months in lots of different countries. And you'll remember back in it was in 2021, perhaps, and I'm not going to get the date correct. It might have been in late 2020 when the number of cases started rising in India, and there were horrific scenes of people, of bodies being picked up and burned. And yet, those scenes, they lasted for about 3 weeks, and then everything was back to normal again. So it's reasonable to anticipate that perhaps the trajectory might not be different, but that the reaction of a somewhat older large population is going to be more severe than it was in India. But nonetheless, people are going to get it and recover from it more often than not. And that suggests that growth in China is going to take a hit in the third quarter, excuse me, in the first quarter of the next 3 months. And by the time we get to the third quarter, everything will have wended its way through the population, and all of the fiscal stimulus that has been announced now will then become evident within the economy, and they'll have got over the hump of that initial big infection rate of COVID. So it would suggest that we're going to see down in the first portion of the year and potentially recovery in the second half of the year. So then think about that. It's worth highlighting the potential then that less demand in China and the potential for growth to really be understated for the first half of the year could have a significant knock-on effect everywhere else. So then let's think about the dollar. So it was in slightly positive territory in here today, but certainly not pushing back above the 200-day moving average, and nothing in the region, nothing really approaching an upper dynamic. Gold prices were a little softer and down about 16, and still not quite yet able to push up through the $1,800 area. And perhaps we're going to get a little bit of additional consolidation going on in here, but it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs that have been in play since March of this year. And then I think it's particularly interesting to pay attention to what's happening in oil. So oil prices were up $2 today. Now we have a short-term oversold condition. So there's the potential here that we're going to get a little bit of steadier action. But if Chinese growth continues to surprise on the downside, then it's hard to make a really bullish argument for oil. And China is now by far the largest consumer of oil, and certainly nowhere near being a big producer of oil. They are obviously now, or I guess we can clearly see that prices are in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And investors are going to be thinking about the fact that that was a potential, well, that was an area of resistance in 2018 and again in 2021. So will it now offer some support? And we certainly have a short-term oversold condition. So I think we can potentially see scope for some additional upside, but probably not much more than that. then natural gas prices are popping on the upside because of colder weather and tight inventories overall, but not holding it. So this is also pointing towards less than enthusiastic support for rebounds. And this was a big pop on the upside in here today, and then just did not hold the move. If we swing around and look at how natural gas is performing in the UK, well, there's a big cold snap and snow in a good part of the country. One would anticipate that prices should be stronger, but we've already had a good sized rebound. And prices, they have broken the downtrend, but they're not accelerating higher. But this does suggest support in the region of the 300 level. So we still have the bulk of winter in front of us in Europe. There's been a lot of work done to boost supplies, and that has been very fruitful. I did see a very encouraging story over the weekend, which was, I thought that it was a really something that was worth highlighting, because one of the biggest bugbears that investors have is how really disappointing the planning process has been in much of the developed world. When you think about how long it takes to get anything built, how much it costs, and then when you get these massive cost overruns and the public purse has to pick them up, and it then I think investors despair at that ever improving. And then we can contrast that with how quickly infrastructure has been built in China. But then when you get an emergency, I think it does help to just restore your faith in the ability of the Western world to get things done. So building a receiving terminal for LNG in Germany, the estimated time to get that done previously was about 5 years, and they're going to get it done in about 4 months. So that necessitated a great deal of flexibility in the planning process, and basically the shelving of a lot of the planning that would normally have been underway. And they did not have time to go out and build all of the things they needed. They had to go out and scour the world for unused pieces of infrastructure equipment like big steel pilings. But they've been able to build the receiving terminal and the 30 kilometers of gas pipeline to connect it to the grid, and they're going to have it done by January. So it doesn't just because we have this sclerotic bureaucratic environment, it doesn't mean that it's always going to be that way. That when we decide to do things, they can be done. And I think that certainly should give everybody hope that the frustration that most people have at the planning process, that in an emergency, then a lot of the hand-wringing about every possible kind of objection goes falls by the wayside, and then we can really do see results. And I think that's going to be important, because there is this perspective around the world that China has already won. That when you think about how much trade is going on between China and the rest of the world, most countries now do more trade with China than they do with the USA. So then that's a big change from 20 years ago. It's also something that I think many people will be concerned with, that China is now the biggest trading nation, or certainly approaching it, and that their planning process, their ability to get stuff done, has greatly outstripped the rest of the world. But I think that we also just need to pay attention to the fact that when emergencies occur, then Everyone else has the same capability to cut corners and to simply avoid some of the planning obstacles that we basically put in our own way. Of course, a lot of it has to do with well, we can say the price of carbon, but I think nobody really wants to be breathing bad air. And carbon prices continue to recover. And the EU is in the process of finalizing its what can really only be described as protectionist policies. Because these new carbon rules for imported goods are very clearly designed to protect European industry. So Europe wants to reduce its carbon footprint and reduce the quantity of fossil fuels that it's consuming. And it is now insisting that anyone who wants to export into the EU has to do the same thing. That's aimed specifically at protecting European industry. But of course, it's going to be viewed as purely protectionist by all of its trading partners. And carbon prices are a big part of the EU's, I guess, adventurism into climate regulation. So that would suggest that we're going to see additional upside in carbon pricing, and the stated objective is to get them up to about 130 euros or 135 euros, and there's every reason to expect that's what's going to happen because the last target was 100 and it hit it earlier this year. So now as we think about the wider stock market, and the S&P 500 is hovering here in the region of the 200-day moving average, and it was in positive territory in here today. So we continue to see steadier action, and we've seen a good-sized rebound from the lows in October, and that was a 27% drawdown from the beginning, or I guess the end of last year, to the low. So that was a significant move. It's the biggest pullback we've seen since the pandemic. And prices paused in the region of the peak from 2019. So that's also the biggest pullback. If we take out the big, very short-term move during the pandemic that we'd seen in the entire bull market. And what that also suggests is that it's less consistent. And we often see that big trends, and there's no question that this was a big trend, lose consistency at the penultimate peak. So now the big question is, how quickly is the Federal Reserve going to reverse its quantitative tightening program? 10-year yields were up a little in here today, up another 3 basis points, firming from the 3.5% level and at the region of the peak from back in June. So it's reasonable to anticipate that we get a little bit of pause and consolidation here in this rebound in treasuries because they're coming off of such very depressed levels, and nobody's really convinced yet that inflation has been fully controlled. But as long as the Federal Reserve continues to contract the size of its balance sheet, then the risks of outright deflation remain, I think, very strong. So that would suggest that we should be preparing for a recession in 2023. And I do think that the shape of the yield curve, the fact that this low from 2020 is significantly below the lows that we'd seen previously, that alone points to a series of much shorter and more violent peak to trough swings. So I think that it would be unreasonable to anticipate that we're going to move back into a big, lengthy, less volatile trending environment, and much more likely that we're going to have choppy action for the foreseeable future, and that we'll have 1 year on the upside, 1 year on the downside, and it's not going to be from January to December, but that there's going to be bouts of provision of liquidity, bouts of removing liquidity, and that the pendulum swings of sentiment have been exceptionally violent for the last 2 years, where we get the big drawdown, the big rebound, and then we get the big drawdown again, and now we're getting another rebound. But earnings are going to roll over. You cannot simply pour that quantity of cash into the system, take money out again, and expect there to be no repercussions. So it's quite likely there's going to be a recession next year. Then there'll be more money poured into the system. We'll get another big rebound in the most liquidity driven portions of the market. So the ARK Innovation ETF is one of those, but the one that I would pay particular attention to is Bitcoin, because it is a liquidity barometer. So it isn't pushing back up into the overhead range just yet. It's been inert before this big drawdown recently, and it's inert again. And it's completely dependent on additional new cash being printed. And that would we're about 15 months or 16 months out from the next halving. So therefore, it's reasonable to anticipate that Bitcoin should bottom about a year to 9 months ahead of the halving, which would put us into around the same time that the worst effects of the coronavirus in China will really start to bite. And that will enhance the potential there will be more liquidity provided. So I would anticipate that we'll see a meaningful low for Bitcoin at some point in the first or second quarters of 2023, and that we'll get a good size rebound when interest rates start to come back down and we get this big move in terms of liquidity. Then the big question will be whether prices will exceed 60,000. Are we going to move into a much, much less consistent trend? Consistent, and then of course, will that gel with a series of more volatile peak to trough swings in the stock market? So these are big questions that are going to be coming up in 2023. But for the moment, at least, we still have steadier action in stocks. I did find it interesting that there was news this morning that Tesla's CEO, Elon Musk, was booed on stage when he appeared with Dave Chappelle in San Francisco over the weekend. And Tesla's stock is down in a fairly dynamic manner in here today, and approaching a new closing low. The power of Elon Musk's personality has been one of the biggest factors in supporting Tesla's price. And it is, so far, sustaining the move down through the 1,000-day moving average. This is a really bearish-looking chart. And then Amazon have not yet fixed their shipping system. So the share is also hovering here below the 100 level, and I suspect that we're going to see additional downside, and all we have right now is barely steady action. The biotechnology sector continues to attract interest, and a good part of the reason for that is because the pace of M&A activity is picking up, and the provision of vaccines to the coronavirus was a massive proof of use case. That would suggest that we're going to see more products like that are using both CRISPR gene editing technology and then re-educating the immune system with immuno-oncology, particularly in the oncology sector, because you get easier access to patients, so you get to test out your products faster, simply because they're going to die anyway. Now that's kind of a grisly calculus, but it is the reality. So it's not like there aren't going to be opportunities, and there will be a lot of trading opportunities, both on the upside and the downside, as we move through this period of monetary conditions tightening until eventually unemployment starts to rise. And then that will be a catalyst for the Federal Reserve to really start to cut interest rates. And they could shave 2 to 3, maybe even 400 basis points off the Fed funds rate. But then they'll have to start putting it back in again because they're now much more alert to inflationary pressures. So these long intervals where they wait to see what happens, I think those are probably now in the rear view mirror. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.